You're listening to the Restless Wanderer podcast by Paul Coulter, and this is part 24 of the series in the books of 1st and 2nd Kings. 2nd Kings chapter 14, verse 1. In the second year of Joash, the son of Joahaz, king of Israel, Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jehoaddan of Jerusalem, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, yet not like David his father. He did in all things as Joash his father had done. But the high places were not removed, the people still sacrificed and made offerings on the high places. And as soon as the royal power was firmly in his hand, he struck down his servants who had struck down the king his father. But he did not put to death the children of the murderers, according to what is written in the book of the law of Moses, where the Lord commanded, "Fathers shall not be put to death because of their children, nor shall children be put to death because of their fathers, but each one shall die for his own sin." He struck down 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt, and took Selah by storm, and called it Jochteel, which is the name to this day. Then Amaziah sent messengers to Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, "Come, let us look one another in the face." And Jehoash, king of Israel, sent word to Amaziah, king of Judah, "A thistle on Lebanon sent to a cedar on Lebanon, saying, 'Give your daughter to my son for a wife.' And a wild beast of Lebanon passed by and trampled down the thistle. You have indeed struck down Edom, and your heart has lifted you up. Be content with your glory and stay at home, for why should you provoke trouble so that you fall, you and Judah with you?" But Amaziah would not listen. So Jehoash, king of Israel, went up, and he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced one another in battle in Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was defeated by Israel, and every man fled to his home. And Jehoash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Jehoash, son of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh, and came to Jerusalem and broke down the wall of Jerusalem for 400 cubits from the Ephraim gate to the corner gate. And he seized all the gold and silver and all the vessels that were found in the house of the Lord and in the treasuries of the king's house, also hostages, and he returned to Samaria. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoash that he did, and his might, and how he fought with Amaziah king of Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Jehoash slept with his fathers, and was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel, and Jeroboam his son reigned in his place. Amaziah the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived for 15 years after the death of Jehoash, son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. Now the rest of the deeds of Amaziah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And they made a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish. But they sent after him to Lachish, and put him to death there. And they brought him on horses, and he was buried in Jerusalem with his fathers in the city of David. And all the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old, and made him king instead of his father Amaziah. He built Elath and restored it to Judah after the king slept with his fathers. We'll pause our reading after verse 22 of 2 Kings 14. Now here we see Amaziah, who is another godly king of the southern kingdom of Judah, the son of Joash. But remember, his father was assassinated by some of his servants. And Amaziah wisely, I suppose, takes revenge on those servants, but he does it with measure. He's said to be obedient to the law that was given through Moses in verse 6, and that law is quoted. So here is a godly king. He's said to have done what was right in the eyes of the Lord, although he falls short of the standard of David. Notice that in verse 3. David is always the gold standard. And the reason he falls short is because he doesn't remove the high places, those places where people were going to worship God rather than coming to the temple, the place that God had appointed. But here is a godly king, seeks to rule under the law of God, to lead the people in devotion to God. And God gives him victory over the Edomites. He strikes down 10,000 of them. That's quite a dramatic defeat. The Edomites had been in rebellion, you might remember, against Judah, having previously been subjugated by Judah. And he has a victory over them. But Amaziah sadly has a problem, and his problem seems to be pride. He decides that with his victory over the Edomites, he has, he's got his wind behind his sails. He thinks he's invincible. He thinks he's a strong man, and he wants to go face to face. He says, "Come, let us look one another in the face." That might sound in verse 8 like a, you know, "I want to meet you." But what he means is, "I want to meet you in battle." Jehoash, the king of Israel, sends back a message and says that the thistle was like the cedar. The thistle is like the Edomites. He uses this story and says to a cedar on Lebanon that give your daughter to my son. But a wild beast passed by and trampled down the thistle. And the wild beast is obviously Amaziah. So who is the cedar? Well, presumably the cedar might be the northern kingdom. Although it's also possible that the cedar represents the northern kingdom and the thistle is Amaziah, and that the beast that's going to trample them down is perhaps Aram, who were the power in the north at that time, or Assyria. So it's not entirely clear what the reference points are. Maybe if it's the second of those interpretations and the thistle is the southern kingdom, what the king of the north is saying is that you're only able to survive because of our protection. Don't get so proud because you think you've struck down Edom. Okay, be content with that little bit of glory and stay at home. But whether that's the illustration, whether the thistle is King Amaziah, or whether the wild beast is it's a moot point, but the point is very clear. It's not a flattery. It's not a positive assessment of the power of Amaziah. It's a derogatory way of describing it. It's perhaps mockery, perhaps trying to put him in his place. But also there is truth in what is said here, because it's clear that Amaziah has become arrogant and lifted up. And Amaziah doesn't listen to the warning from Jehoahash. And instead he goes to battle, and he loses that battle decisively. And again, Judah is impoverished further. There is silver and gold taken from the house of the Lord, and also hostages taken to Samaria. So here is a king who at one hand is godly and rules according to the law of God, but he's also arrogant in battle. He's certainly no David. He's not the servant of God in the way that David was. Jehoash dies and is buried in Samaria. And Jeroboam, his son, reigns in his place. We've read that before, and we'll come on to the reign of Jeroboam the second. Carries the same name as that first king of the northern kingdom who rebelled against Rehoboam. But the life of Amaziah, perhaps weakened because of this disaster and conflict, but certainly his life ends in the same way that his father's had. He is assassinated by unnamed conspirators. They conspire against him. He flees to Lachish, but they send after him and put him to death there. And they bury him in the dynasty, the tombs of the dynasty of David, and his son, 16 years old, Azariah, is put on the throne. So again, although there is an assassination, the royal line stays with the dynasty of David, as it always does in the southern kingdom, except for that 6 years when Athaliah seized power. Let's read on then. 2 Kings 14, verse 23. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria, and he reigned for 41 years, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. He restored the border of Israel from Lebo Hamath as far as the Sea of the Arabah, according to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spoke by his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai the prophet, who was from Gath-Hepher. For the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, for there was none left, bond or free, and there was none to help Israel. But the Lord had not said that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, so he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did, and his might, how he fought, and how he restored Damascus and Hamath to Judah in Israel, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Jeroboam slept with his fathers, the kings of Israel, and Zechariah, his son, reigned in his place. We'll pause there after the end of 1 Kings or 2 Kings 14. And here we see the contrast between what is happening in the southern kingdom. The southern kingdom is becoming weaker under Amaziah, his defeat, although he has a victory over the Edomites, his defeat at the hand of Joash is weakening the southern kingdom. They'd already been weakened, of course, by giving money away to the king of Aram. But Jeroboam II here takes the northern kingdom from strength to strength. We've already seen the favour of God back in the previous chapter. We saw God's favour towards the northern kingdom and how God gave three victories over Hazael, or the son of Hazael, rather, Ben-Hadad, to Jehoash. And now we see God's continued favour to the northern kingdom. God looks and he sees the suffering of this kingdom at the hand of the Arameans, and he restores through Jeroboam the border of Israel to the full extent actually of where it had been in the time of Solomon. If you read about those places that are mentioned, it says he restored, verse 25, the border from Lebo Hamath as far as the Sea of Arabah. And Lebo Hamath in Numbers 13:21 is described as the northern boundary, the ideal northern boundary of the land of the Israelites. The Sea of Arabah is the Dead Sea, Joshua 3:16 and 12:13. So if you look back to 1 Kings 8:65, you'll see that this is roughly the same extent as the territory of Solomon. So this is quite a dramatic change in the fortunes of the northern kingdom that had been in decline. The Lord didn't say that he would blot out the name of Israel, the writer tells us. He saved them through Jeroboam. And then we have a reference to, of course, one of the most famous characters, certainly one of the most famous prophets in the Old Testament, Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, who was from Gath-Hepher, verse 25. Now, of course, Jonah is most famous for being kept alive by God in the belly of a great fish, or often people say a whale, but the text says a great fish. But in the book of Jonah, we see Jonah reluctantly going to Assyria to proclaim judgment on the Assyrians, but knowing God's character, that God was a relenting God, he didn't want to go because he didn't want them to be forgiven by God if they repented. And ironically, in the book of Jonah, of course, they do repent, and Jonah ends up sulking because he didn't want them to be forgiven by God. But here we see Jonah speaking a word of comfort and restoration to the Israelites. It says that this restoration of their borders was according to the word of the Lord spoken by his servant Jonah, verse 25, in response to God's observation of the affliction of Israel. Jonah doesn't seem to have a problem, although he's not quoted here, in declaring God's favour and grace towards Israel, which is unrepentant, but he's angry at declaring God's grace, God's judgment rather, to the Assyrians in case they might repent and be forgiven. So if you've studied or heard someone teach from the book of Jonah, you'll realize that Jonah is the key example, the leading example in the Old Testament of an Israelite who is ethnocentric in his thinking, who thinks that God's favor should only be on the Israelites. Well, here we see actions that are very much in keeping with that. On one hand, he's declaring God's favour towards Israel. On the other hand, God's judgment towards the Assyrians. But the great irony is that the Assyrians are the ones who repent, and the Israelites, despite God's favour here, as we see, do not repent and do not return to the faithful worship of God and to the dynasty of David. Jonah is a complex character. But let's read on then into 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 1. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 16 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 52 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jecoliah of Jerusalem, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord according to all that his father Amaziah had done. Nevertheless, the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and made offerings on the high places. And the Lord touched the king so that he was a leper to the day of his death, and he lived in a separate house. And Jotham, the king's son, was over the household, governing the people of the land. Now the rest of the acts of Azariah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And Azariah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the city of David, and Jotham his son reigned in his place. We'll pause there after verse 7 of 2 Kings 15. Now this Azariah is also known as Uzziah, and Uzziah of course is significant because he's mentioned in the book of Isaiah, that Isaiah the prophet was appointed and had a vision of God in the year that King Uzziah died. So we're coming very close to the time of the prophets who wrote books. We've seen Elijah and Elisha who didn't write prophetic books, but we've read about Jonah, who of course is described in a prophetic book, and we're coming now towards the time of Isaiah, who was one of the greatest of the writing prophets. Azariah or Uzziah is struck by leprosy, by God with leprosy, and so he has to live in a separate house, keep isolated from people. He can't give the leadership that a king who is in a theocratic nation under the rule of God ought to give. And so his son Jotham becomes involved in governing the people of the land before his son dies, a co-regnancy or a regency, and then Jotham becomes king after him. Just to mention, I've mentioned this once way back in this series, but we have this mention of the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah, and it's simply to say that this is a reference to an unknown book. It's not the book that we call Chronicles, but a history book that was recording the details of the reigns of these kings that would have been known to the original readers, but that is lost to us. Now we have more detail about this King Azariah in Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 26, that tells us a great deal about his military activities, how he made the military stronger in the southern kingdom, how he built up some fortifications and was a building king, and how he had success from God, as it says in 2 Chronicles 26, verse 5, as long as he sought the Lord. And we're told there too that the leprosy was because he was afflicted with leprosy because he took on himself the function of a priest. He burnt incense at the temple, which was something only the priest ought to have done. So we don't get all the detail here, but we do, I suppose, reading about leprosy, we know that there must have been a reason, and Chronicles gives us that reason. So here again we have a king who starts out well. He's a godly king who does what is right, but he turns out to be foolish as well in taking on himself a priestly role. Let's continue to read 2 Kings 15, verse 8. In the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reigned over Israel in Samaria for 6 months. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, as his fathers had done. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. Shallum, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and struck him down at Ibleam and put him to death and reigned in his place. Now the rest of the deeds of Zechariah, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. This was the promise of the Lord that he give Jehu, Your sons shall sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation. And so it came to pass. Shallum, the son of Jabesh, began to reign in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah, and he reigned for 1 month in Samaria. Then Menahem, the son of Gadi, came up from Tirzah and came to Samaria, and he struck down Shallum, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria, and put him to death, and reigned in his place. Now the rest of the deeds of Shallum and the conspiracy that he made, behold, are they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. At that time, Menahem sacked Tifsha and all who were in it, and its territory from Tirzah on, because they did not open it to him. Therefore he sacked it, and he ripped open all the women in it who were pregnant. In the 39th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Menahem, the son of Gadi, began to reign over Israel, and he reigned for 10 years in Samaria, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart all his days from all the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land, and Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver, that he might help him to confirm his hold on the royal power. Menahem exacted the money from Israel, that is, from all the wealthy men, 50 shekels of silver from every man to give to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and did not stay there in the land. Now the rest of the deeds of Menahem and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Menahem slept with his fathers, and Pekahiah his son reigned in his place. In the 50th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekahiah, the son of Menahem, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, and he reigned for 2 years, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. And Pekah, the son of Remaliah, his captain, conspired against him with 50 men of the people of Gilead, and struck him down in Samaria, in the citadel of the king's house, with Argob and Ariah. He put him to death, and reigned in his place. Now the rest of the deeds of Pekahiah and all that he did, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. In the 52nd year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekah the son of Remaliah began to reign over Israel in Samaria, and he reigned for 20 years. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came and captured Ijon, Abel-Beth-Macha, Janoa, Kedesh, Hazor, Gilead, and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and he carried the people captive to Assyria. Then Hoshea the son of Elah made a conspiracy against Pekah the son of Remaliah, and struck him down, and put him to death, and reigned in his place in the 20th year of Jotham the son of Uzziah. Now the rest of the acts of Pekah and all that he did, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. We'll pause our reading after verse 31 of 2 Kings 15. Now here we see this quick succession of kings. We've gone from Jeroboam, who was the longest reigning of all the kings in the northern kingdom, 41 years. And now we have the end of the dynasty of Jehu, as we're reminded, just as God had said, the promise that he gave to Jehu, there would be 4 generations. Well, the 4th generation comes to the throne and reigns for only 6 months before he's overthrown by Shallum. And then Shallum himself reigns for just 1 month. And then is overthrown by Menahem, who's a particularly distasteful character. He's the one who, in revenge on Tifsha, sacks it from Tirzah on because they didn't open to him when he was trying to take over the nation, and he rips open the pregnant women. This is a sign of just how far the northern rulers have fallen from God's law and from God's purpose for his people. Menahem then reigns for 10 years, and he, as all of the kings, successive kings, are said to be evil in the sight of the Lord following the sins of Jeroboam. But the significant thing in Menahem's reign is that we have Pul, the king of Assyria, coming against the land and being paid off by Menahem. Pul is another name for Tiglath-Pileser III, apparently, and that's the same king who's named in verse 29. So it's not two different kings of Assyria. But this is a shift in the geopolitical balance in the region. Up to now, it's been Aram, or for the last number of chapters, it's been Aram, the northeastern neighbour of Israel, roughly in the territory of modern-day Syria, that has been the threat, has been harassing the northern kingdom, taking some of its territory. Now it's Assyria. That, of course, is where Jonah the prophet had gone, to Nineveh. Assyria has risen to be a power in the region, and Aram has now declined, the land that is in between Assyria and Israel. Perhaps it's the growing power of the Assyrians that actually provokes some of the coups that we read about, five kings and four coups in this chapter that we've read. And although we've read about God's compassion to Israel during the reign of Jeroboam in chapter 14, Jeroboam, who was still an ungodly king, but God was favourable towards them, what we're seeing here is that Israel, the northern kingdom, did not turn back to God. They didn't purify themselves. They didn't rid themselves of the idolatrous worship that was a barrier to God's blessing and favour. And so we're beginning now to see their decline towards the exile that will come at the hands of the Assyrians. So this is a story of God's favour and blessing, and yet people's rebellion and rejection of God. Let's read again in 2 Kings 15, verse 32. In the second year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 16 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Nevertheless, the high places were not removed. The people still sacrificed and made offerings on the high places. He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord. Now the rest of the acts of Jotham and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? In those days the Lord began to send Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, against Judah. Jotham slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David his father, and Ahaz his son reigned in his place. We'll pause our reading at the end there, or stop our reading at the end of 2 Kings 15. And so here we're seeing the southern kingdom again in view, still with the dynasty of David. We have Jotham, who is reigning. And he, again, is a godly king who does what is right. He follows after Uzziah, or Ahaziah, his father, who, of course, we had seen was a godly king. But by reference to Chronicles, we learnt, or Azariah, rather, not Ahaziah. We learnt that Azariah, though he was godly and he did good to begin with, he was struck with leprosy because he overstepped his responsibility and offered incense. But Jotham follows in his godly pattern, but again, still the high places are not removed. The people offer sacrifices in those places. But we're also told that Jotham was a builder. He built the upper gates of the house of the Lord, and yet it was in his reign that God began to send the king of Assyria, Rezin, and Pekah. And so even as Assyria is rising as a threat to both Syria, or Aram, and to Israel, the northern kingdom, those two kingdoms are working together to raid the southern kingdom of Judah. And this may again explain part of the reason why God will bring judgment on the northern kingdom, because they are fighting against the dynasty of David. And this alliance between the northern kingdom and Syria, or Aram, has been called the Syro-Ephraimite War, because Ephraim was the dominant kingdom or tribe rather in the Northern Kingdom. We know that it was around 735 to 732 BC. So we haven't mentioned dates often as we've been going through this. We know that David's reign was around 1000 BC. Solomon in the early decades of the 900s BC, but that by now we're in the middle of the 700s BC, the 8th century BC. And if you're familiar with the dates, you'll know that in 722, that's when the Northern Kingdom fell to the Assyrians. So we're only around 15 years prior to that when this war is going on, or 10 to 13 years prior to it. It seems that this was an attempt for these two rulers to force Judah to join them against the Assyrians. But we'll read more about that as we get into the reign of Ahaz, the son of Jotham. So what we're seeing here is, again, the decline of the Northern Kingdom, but also tension between the two kingdoms. It seems like Judah is the weaker of the two, and yet Judah is where the faithful kings are. And as we'll see, it's to Judah that God will continue to bring blessing and security for much longer after Assyria has risen. But more of that in future episodes.